America and all of our listeners around the world. You're listening to yet another exciting installment of Let's Weekend. I'm your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Sologi, and Teresa Sammons is joining us as well. Say hi to the guys, folks.
Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for February 10th, 2024. I am now officially 38 years old. So, yeah.
Congrats.
I am now 2 years shy of 40. And yeah, you know, people ask me, it's like, this is the first time in a long time I've been able to say, like, people have asked me, do you feel any older? And I say, yeah, actually I do. I'll get to it in a little bit, but let's just been saying that because of work, I've been suffering some issues with my knees. But other than that, you know, it's just a relatively unusually mild weathered February. Let's put it that way. And let's be honest, when it comes to knee issues, that kind of weather doesn't really help all that much. But we'll be talking about that a little later. We got some other stuff to talk about this week, among other things. There was an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that basically slandered an entire town in Michigan. And it actually may have actually brought danger to that town. A former very famous commentator, now disgraced, had a interview with Vladimir Putin, and there's a couple of times where it looks like he might have regretted it. We also have some other stuff, including some medical news about the current reigning monarch of the United Kingdom of Britain, Scotland, Wales, and I guess a small part of Ireland. And we also have some more ridiculousness happening in Congress, some more political news about the presidential races. You'll pretty much know how that ended. And, Gina Carano is trying to salvage what may or may not be left of her career, and it is about as ridiculous as you can expect it to be. And, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment stuff to discuss as well. But before we do all that, as always, we will start this off with, as is tradition, talking about all the stuff we've been doing up to this point this week. And, as always, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
I do think you forgot to mention that this is episode 400.
Yeah, we've actually done 400 of these things. Dear God, what is wrong with us?
Yeah.
But this is episode 400. We have done 400 of these things, and I've pretty much hosted every single one of them. I don't know why, other than the fact that I just genuinely enjoy doing this. Yeah. We here at Smashpad, we don't do any of this for money. We do it for the enjoyment of it. Because, you know, we're not getting paid. But, so it's episode 400. And to start off episode 400, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Dealing with the aftermath of moving.
Yeah.
All the extra work that goes into moving all the boxes into organized places versus just wherever it seemed good at the time to put it down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fun. Mostly have it all cleared out for the most part. So that's fun. Did get a bill for the electric for whenever my billing started to when they check, and it's like $5 because it's like 5 days or whatever. So that's fun to get a bill of that much, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been fun to deal with that. I haven't really been watching much. Just been busy with work and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Weather's been pretty decent here in the 40s and 50s the last few days, as it continues to be in spurts, sort of unseasonably warm.
Yeah.
Here, getting up to around 60. I don't know that it hit 60, but got pretty close to that. But yeah, for things I've been doing, games I've been playing, I've been playing more Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I'm still in Chapter 14, but that's one of those, here's a bunch of side quest chapters.
Yeah.
Busy work that they give you to do. So that's fun, and yeah, it's I think I'm almost done, where I'm about to start getting back on the main quest line, but did all the Colosseum stuff I had, which wasn't too hard for any of that. And then did, yeah, I'm using a guide for the side quest, because this was like the first of the side quests where it doesn't really put anything on the map. It's like, oh, you need to go find these chocobo that ran away after all hell broke loose in Sector 7. And you need to go do this thing and then that thing and then find this music for this kid. And I already had most of it. So just been kind of using a guide to make sure I know where to go and not waste any time searching for things. So that's been pretty fun, though. Their idea of how to show places on a map is not what I would do on this guide. They show the literal map and not like, here's the thing you should look for in that area. Because Final Fantasy VII Remake's maps are not necessarily great for finding landmarks so much. So, but that's been largely it for that. The other game I've put some time into is Spirit Hunter's Infinite Horde. I have gotten all the upgrades for the main save I'm using. So I got the trophy for that. I got the trophy for beating the last map on Brutal Mode, but I still have one more to do. But now that I don't have to beat any of the challenges on Brutal Mode, I can just sort of play through with the character I like and go for weapons that make sense for what I'm doing. So that'll be it. And I think that's about it for trophies. I think the last one I have is to get a level 100 character in a run, which is definitely challenging, but there are some pets that you can get to beef up the XP gain, that kind of stuff. So nothing too hard, but just put a little more time into it. And that's been pretty much it for what I've been doing. So, Teresa, what about you?
All right. Teresa, what about you?
Well, I am still playing Pal World. what a shock. The world. I am not going to take it to level 50. I already know myself well enough to know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I keep going back for more. I've started doing the breeding now, and it takes like freaking 15 minutes to bake a damn cake in that game, and you have to have a cake or they're not going to breed. It's interesting. I'm looking at what I'm going to move on to next. I might go back to Octopath 2 because I haven't finished. I haven't even gotten halfway to finish. So in the meantime, I've been watching really a lot of TV. We have like plowed through a decent bit of Dragon Ball Z Kai. We are at the point where Dragon Balls on Namek turned to stone. So that's where we are in that. And I have been watching Hazbin Hotel. And my kid likes Hazbin Hotel. Scott's kind of like, is this showrunner working through some issues, maybe?
Yeah, kind of, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she is. She is an SA survivor. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that explains a lot about Angel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You did watch episode 4.
Wow. We're at the point where Lucifer is back, and he just
episode
had
five.
And we're like halfway through it. He just had his big, almost battle duet with the radio god. So,
Alistair? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's intriguing.
Yeah.
I think we're going to finish it tonight.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. First time I watched the pilot, I was like, I don't know about this. Then I watched it a second time, and then I watched it a third time, and then around the eighth time, I was like, yeah, I think I'm obsessed with this now. this is going to be my absurd fascination for probably the rest of my life now. What the hell?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's it is pretty freaking cool, and yeah, I'm sure we're gonna be through the first season.
Yeah,
maybe by midnight, probably not, but
yeah. Fortunately, I can say there aren't really any more episodes that are quite as intense as episode 4 was, because episode 4 is brutal to watch.
They like,
because
they
so here's it. Yeah, they brought it. Here's the thing, because obviously there's the pilot, and the pilot, you know, you kind of you don't really learn about like Angel Dust's sort of past. You just kind of know the basics of it, you know. Mm-hmm. He's a porn star. He's, you know, he turns tricks. You know, you do kind of see, you know, Valentino, the guy who's his pimp at the very beginning, but you don't really see much of a connection to him. But then about a year later, they had a music video came out that was called Addict, which was makes it a bit more explicit about what's going on. But mm-hmm. even then, it's more, I guess, subtext. Yeah, episode 4, they just said, yeah, screw subtext. We're going to show you exactly what he's going through and just how awful it is. And the absolute worst part of it is that they end up teaming it up with probably one of the best songs of the entire series up to this point. Yeah. And constantly flashing back and forth, he's like, so you got this nice little dance number and everything. Oh, by the way, here's all the awful shit that's actually happening to him. While this little music video, because here's the thing, that whole like music video dance sequence thing he's got going, that is him actually disassociating doing it. All that stuff that you see flashing on the screen and flashing behind him, that's the shit that's actually happening.
Yeah. It was something.
And then you see the and somehow that's not even the most scariest part of the whole episode. It's not that. It's not seeing, you know, Valentino brutalize him in his dressing room. It's not seeing him, you know, try to make sure that he doesn't hurt Charlie and trying to basically do whatever he can to get her out of that place because he knows what Valentino is capable of.
Yeah.
No, the scariest part of that whole episode is watching the meltdown that he has afterwards.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was. That was unexpected.
Yeah. That's the thing about Vibzy Pop, man. Her stuff is that a lot of her stuff can be really silly, and she does have a very kind of, I guess you could say, edgy DeviantArt kind of humor. But then every so often, she reminds you that, oh yeah, this shit that's happening isn't really cool. It's some awful crap going down. So yeah, be prepared to cry, is what I'm saying. But yeah, you watched it and you like it so far. That's good.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
So after you watch that, you have to start watching Hell of a Boss on YouTube.
Oh yeah?
Series takes place in the same universe. They kind of branches out and tells you more about what this particular universe kind of looks like. It's more lighthearted than Hasbun Hotel is, but it can have its dark moments too, but it doesn't quite deal with the really heavy stuff that Hasbun does. It's more about stuff like, you know, personal trauma, you know, low self-esteem, you know, power imbalance, stuff like that. And you don't really learn about it until like maybe the second episode. It's like first episode's really silly. Then the second episode comes out and it kind of just blindsides you with how good it is. And it's like, yeah, so. But yeah, so you've been watching that.
Yeah, I've been watching that, and just a butt ton of YouTube and nonsense, old stuff, Daria, Seinfeld, just all over the place. I think I, like most other people, I'm recreating cable TV. So hopefully without all the BS costs that that we might talk about. Is anybody talking about just the general ill ease with the whole streaming situation?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially with the shit that went down with Crunchyroll.
Yep, Crunchyroll. They just killed Funimation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I'm definitely taking my entertainment into my own hands for the most part. Mm. And the $2.99 thing for Amazon Prime, yeah, I'm getting through Hasbun Hotel way quick before they start pulling that shit. Cause I'm not paying extra and I'm not going to watch the commercials.
Yeah.
They all have way too much to do to sit around watching commercials like that, you know, except for tomorrow, but you know, but otherwise that's pretty much what I've been up to. What have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I'm still playing Persona 3 Reload, and I've gotten a little bit further into that game, kind of getting a more kind of general idea of like how it, because again, Persona 3 is sort of where they started to like build off on what would eventually become Persona 4 and Persona 5. A lot of the sort of basics that you see for is like the social system and the, you know, the, a lot of that stuff, the sort of overall, well, I mean, the high school stuff was in the first two games too, but you start to see it, and you can definitely see where they took this game and where they took a lot of lessons for Persona 5 and this remake. It does, however, sort of go a bit more onto like how the sort of overall the dungeons in this game work. Much like with Persona 4, the dungeons that you go into, most of them are sort of randomly generated. Persona 5, they are not randomly generated. They are all very clearly constructed and made to be, you know, gone through in a certain pattern. But Persona 3 and 4, they were randomly generated. But the difference is that unlike in Persona 5, where like all the dungeons are located in like different places or different locations that you have to cross over into, Persona 3 does the same thing that Persona 4 does, which is in Persona 4, you had to go through the TV into the other side of the other side to go into those dungeons. In Persona 3, the original idea was that they called it the tower. It would show up right around the entrance to where their high school is, right around during the dark hour, which is like supposedly an extra hour in the day that can only be perceived by certain people. And it may or may not have something to do with the tower itself. And what happens is when you're going through the game, the dungeons themselves, they all have like, are like Persona 4. They all have their own essential themes, although they're not quite as connected to the character that you're going up against. Because unlike in Persona 4, where it's like you have all these individuals being possessed, for lack of a better word, in Persona 3, it's more like various what they call shadows coming into existence and manifesting into these freaky things. And for example, the first like major shadow, the boss that you fight in this game, is not located in the tower. It's actually located on one of the monorail cars that you use to get to and from school. And it actually is like, it puts you on a timer because the boss that you're going up against is speeding up the monorail car, and there's a stationary one that's just a few miles away, and you have to end up beating the boss as quickly as you can, because if you don't, then it's going to end up crashing, and well, it's going to be a bad time for everyone. Persona 3 is the game that made the Persona series basically a thing over here in the U.S. And it was mostly because it happened purely through word of mouth, and it was because of the resonators. In Persona 3, the way that you summon your persona is with a device that's called a resonator that just so happens to look like a pistol that you have to aim at your head and then pull the trigger.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the game ended up sort of getting word of mouth. It was the Suicide Simulator JRPG, as the sort of meme was, and you know, this was back in the early 2000s. So, but yeah, so that's Persona 3, you know, a lot of fun, enjoying that. We'll be doing my review as soon as I'm finished with it. Other than that, I finished the first Fear and Hunger, so I got a copy of Fear and Hunger Termina. And Fear and Hunger Termina is a sort of distant sequel to the original Fear and Hunger in a couple of different ways. The one being that the original Fear and Hunger sort of took place in an era that was sort of analogous to our late Middle Ages, whereas Fear and Hunger Termina takes place in something analogous to our early 1940s, where you're in a city that's vaguely meant to be somewhere between like Paris and Eastern Europe that is currently being occupied by what's called the Bremen Army. And it's pretty mm-hmm. obvious who the Bremen Army are supposed to be. Yeah. And for the record, the game makes it very clear. Yeah, these guys are assholes. The big difference here, though, is that, the Bremens are more for just straight up, like their entire MO is expansionism for its own sake. There's no ideological reason underneath it. It's because their leader, who's literally called the Golden Kaiser, is just wants to expand the Bremen Empire as far out as he can. There is a reason for it, but it's very lore heavy. But the big difference between this game and the first one is that, unlike in the first one, combat is actually encouraged this time around. In the original Fear and Hunger Termina, combat was something that you did sort of as a last resort, at least at the very beginning. Because, as I say multiple times, the original Fear and Hunger is not an RPG. It's a survival horror game that looks like an RPG. But Termina, on the other hand, is very much supposed to be an RPG where you're supposed to fight. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should fight every single thing that you come in contact with, because there's still a bunch of stuff that will kill you in horrible, horrible ways if you mess up. There's also the difference in that you have a lot more characters to choose from starting out. There's like, I think, a good 7 people that you can choose from the very beginning. Each one of them has their own story arc, and they all sort of interact with each other in various ways. And the overall, the graphics are kind of a bit more elaborate than the first Fear and Hunger was. Also, it's somewhat more, I don't want to necessarily say tame, but a bit more reserved than the first Fear and Hunger was. There's still some pretty graphic shit that happens in this game, but it's more few and far between than the first Fear and Hunger was. Let me put it that way. Mm. Also, you have guns now. You know, that definitely helps. And other than that, what else? Oh yeah. I've been watching something on Prime that I think I may have heard that it existed. It's an animated series for adults, by, Titmouse, who, I don't know if you, have you guys watched the Superman anime, the new one?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
them. Yeah. It's them. That's them.
They also, Titmouse also had something to do with Regular Show.
Yeah, they did. I think they did production work on it. But yeah. It's called Pantheon. And it's kind of a bitch to watch because it's if you live in the U.S., the show is region locked, which you know what that means. VPN yes. time. So you have to kind of mess around with a VPN to watch it. But if you get a chance, holy shit, you need to watch this. It is incredible. It is one of the most amazing pieces of science fiction I have ever watched, period. That's both animated and non-animated, period. It's based on a series of short stories by Ken Liu, who... He's one of my personal favorite writers. He was also the guy who translated the Three Body Problem into English. So he's kind of a legend in the field. And it's kind of hard to describe, but okay. So have you guys ever heard of the singularity before?
I mean, like,
or at least what the concept.
Yeah. Like in other sci-fi stuff.
Like in Terminator, for example, or, you know, shit like that, where eventually the AI or whatever gets so intelligent that it ends up, you know, basically speeding up progress to the point that it's no longer recognizable, sometimes with very drastic consequences, like in Terminator. Well, the thing is, as we've now come to realize, AI is not really as reliable as we think it is, because it's still heavily reliant on human input to a certain extent. Because AI is 100% based on logic. And the thing about logic is, logic doesn't really work unless you have emotion to go along with it. And AI is basically incapable of recreating anything that can be, you know, equivalent to human emotion. But there's something else you may have heard of called UI, that's uploaded intelligence, wherein you try to recreate a human brain and then upload it into the cloud. Well, Pantheon is basically about what happens when either one or two different giant telecom corporations finally manage to create the technology to effectively copy and upload a human brain up into the cloud. And what that ends up happening. It's essentially about there's one guy, he's a computer programmer who worked for a company called Laga Systems, who passed away from cancer. And towards the end, he donated his brain to the company that he worked for, which was Laga Systems. And two years later, his daughter starts getting these mysterious chat logs from someone that's entirely in emojis that's trying to communicate with her. And eventually it comes about that they had actually succeeded in turning his UI into like a viable, intelligent thing up in the cloud. He's also not the only one. There's another character named Lori who was killed in a accident with a drunk driver that put her into a coma, and they ended up putting her brain up into the cloud before they pulled the plug on her. She ends up managing to break out of the server farm that they were keeping her in and connects herself into the internet. She then is able to get in contact with the guy I mentioned previously. And then this starts this whole sort of kind of information arms race where suddenly humanity is at this point of no return, where now people can start uploading their consciousness into the cloud. And then they end up getting joined by a third person and then a fourth person and a fifth person. And then they find out that there's a flaw in the code that is making their intelligences slowly start to diminish. And all I'm going to say is I'm in episode 6 of the first season, which is about 8 episodes, and it's amazing. The first two episodes alone are worth the price. It's just I it is impossible for me to accurately describe. It's brain breaking. It's funny. It's heart rending. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It's amazing. Highly recommend it. There, I cannot recommend it highly enough. Really, other than that, not much more. I've been, because of the work that I do, I have been dealing with some issues with my knees. And what I discovered is that, you know, if I can actually like help with the pain with like a heating pad, which seems to suggest that my knees might be getting arthritic, which sucks. but yeah, so I've been having to deal with that shit and it sucks.
It does. This is not like, this isn't a cure or anything, but BioFreeze helps so much. It really helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to look into that. Or at least I'm planning to. That is basically what I've been doing for this week, more or less. Does anybody want to add anything else before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty then. Well then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And you know, one of the things about us is that we are, you know, being that we're all major gamers here, we kind of get kind of heavily invested in Japanese popular culture. It's just the thing. If you're a gamer, you're going to get really acquainted with Japan after a little while. Japan is essentially the birthplace of a lot of modern gaming as we know it. Not the first successful video game console, but the one that probably had the longest lasting staying power was born from there. It basically helped put some kickstart the heart of the industry after it looked like it might have been dead after the great video game crash of the early 80s. And so obviously if you play video games and have played them as long as you have, there are certain things about Japan you sort of learn to become acquainted with, because otherwise it just looks completely freaking nonsensical to somebody who has no idea what's actually going on. And like a lot of the rest of the folks here in Smash Pad, I was always a big fan of the Street Fighter series. And one of the major characters that was not originally from the Street Fighter series, he was introduced in later. He actually originated the Final Fight series, and that was the character called Sodom, although that's not really what he was. I'm pretty sure, yeah, they called him Katana for a while, and then they started calling him Sodom again in recent years. And he originally showed up in the first Final Fight game. He was one of the next to last bosses that you fought before you went up against the leader of the Mad Gear gang. And he was this dude who was like decked out in like kind of goofy samurai armor with like a red. He had like a blue samurai helmet with like some red armor, and he was carrying around a pair of katanas. And every time you hit him, you would drop his katanas and you could use them to attack him back. He was actually one of the more difficult bosses to fight in that game because his katanas were incredibly damaging. And he also had some fast sort of charging moves, kind of similar to what Raw Lento had. But that's sort of neither here nor there. He was introduced to the Street Fighter series proper with Street Fighter Alpha. And what was neat about him was that in the stage that he fought in, because the whole thing about this character is that he's basically an American who is obsessed with Japanese culture. So he's like one of the early, like, sort of one of the early, like, joke weeaboo characters in Japanese pop culture. And let's be honest, there have been many, many since. But one of the things he had was that in his background, he had an enormous truck with a trailer that was heavily painted and graffitied on with a lot of really elaborate artwork of like kabuki actors and sea waves and rising suns and all that stuff. And for anybody who was like me and saw that and thought, wow, that's kind of cool, I wonder what that's about. Well, wonder no longer, because that is based on an entire subculture that exists in Japan, based around something called dekotora, or decorative trucks. So over in Japan, they have truck drivers, just like we do, who drive trucks as their career. And they drive, you know, all kinds of things. They drive vegetables, they drive beets, they drive, you know, groceries, furniture, various kinds of stuff that they need to get to various places. And in their off times, they often will take their trucks and they will end up decorating them so that they end up looking like, well, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can paste this into the chat here. Yeah, they end up looking like that. And yes, those are
it's like a transformer.
Yeah. It's extra is what it is. But yes, these are working trucks. The truck drivers do in fact use these for work. They do use these to drive whatever products they need to get from one part of Japan to the other. And they're notorious for, covering these things in neon or LED lights, paint jobs, murals, stainless steel or golden parts. They'll add in all types of they'll add spoilers and stuff that, all of these accessories and things that look completely over the top and crazy. And you're looking at this shit and you're thinking, first of all, that's actually kind of neat. And if you're wondering, where the hell did this subculture even start from? We actually do have a, funny enough, we actually do have a point where we can start to it. It starts in the mid 70s. In 1975, Toei released the first in a series of 10 comedy films called Toraku Yaro, or Truck Guys. And these were mid-70s Japanese comedies, and they starred truck drivers who would drive around these incredibly garishly decorated trucks all over up and down Japan. The second picture I've put here in the chat actually is the truck that was used in the first movie.
Wow.
The thing you also have, well, there's another part of this you also have to remember, which is that even though, trucks were obviously a thing that was happening, trucks and truck drivers already existed in Japan by the mid 70s. They were largely restricted to northeastern fishing transport trucks before these movies. Before that, ready-made parts for trucks were actually pretty, I want to say rare, but they were kind of hard to get your hands on. So because of this, a lot of their truck drivers had to do self-care and self-maintenance on their work vehicles, which meant that they often had to get creative in, restoring and replacing parts. And at some point, that evolved into this entire sort of DIY subculture where they not only self-repaired their trucks, they also just started adding a bunch of random shit on it just for kicks. And the thing is, because this entire subculture is has been around for so long, there's three different styles that now exist. There's one that's based around Kanzai, there's one that's based around Kanto. There's even what's called the retro style, which sticks to the sort of aesthetics of the mid 70s building styles. And since then, it's not only restricted to trucks now either. There's now Dekochari, which are motorcycles, and these are usually used by bike gangs. And let's be honest, if you've watched any anime, you've definitely watched anime, you know what I'm talking about. If you've watched Akira, you know the type of motorcycles I'm talking about, because Japanese, they don't have really, let's be honest, really overrated Harley Davidsons. They got more, they got, Toyotas and Hondas and Mitsubishi bikes. Yeah. And the thing about those is that theirs tend to be designed with different purposes in mind. So they tend to look a lot more outlandish and sort of unusual compared to the sort of really utilitarian designs you see over in the West for motorcycles. And eventually it did make its way into other stuff too. You guys are familiar with Itasha. For those of you who don't know what an Itasha is, those are the cars that are decorated with anime characters that you'll often see at conventions or on the internet, stuff like that. Usually with VTuber characters, or let's be honest, characters from porno games or hentai. stuff like that. And of course, it's not limited to cars either. They'll also stick them on motorcycles again, just sort of coming around again, full circle. It's actually kind of funny how it like ended up sort of like, there's like other, like you'll see other like versions of this in like other parts of the world too. So like in the Philippines, they have jeepneys, which are, you know, were like originally made from like surplus American jeeps. A lot of like private jeepney workers who have them, they'll also heavily decorate theirs as well. You have the Shiva buses that you can find in and around Colombia and Ecuador. The painted Haitian buses that you'll find in Haiti called Tap Taps. Just in general in South Asia, is really into the idea of like using trucks as decorative objects. You'll find them in, because like India, for example, has a huge culture of like garishly decorating work vehicles. You can find them not just in India, but also in Pakistan and Bangladesh. They'll even show up in Afghanistan sometimes. It's an amazing kind of neat subculture. And the thing was, is that for the longest time, I would keep seeing like these Tekotors like show up in games. You know, they would like show up in there. Like here's a really recent example. Pokemon Scarlet, the Star Mobiles.
Oh my God, they are.
That's what they are. They're Dekotora. That's what they are.
Yeah.
You know, that just so happens to be, you know, powered by a Pokemon that they somehow managed to jury-rig to the hood. that's Dekotora, one of those interesting bits of Japanese culture that's just kind of reminds you how Japan, in the best of ways, can be just a bit off-kilter and yet go so hard into it at the same time. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, with that, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our asshole of the week, our first asshole of the week, at least this year, is the Wall Street Journal, or at least this one dickbag who wrote this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, where he called Dearborn, Michigan, quote, America's jihad capital, which basically meant that the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, had to increase police presence as a result just for the safety of the residents.
Oh, my God.
Especially for their Islam population there.
Yeah. Well, not just Islam population, but heavily Somali in general.
And it's just a lot of people getting increased sort of hate crimes and stuff being yelled at them for this as a result. As the mayor described, an alarming increase in bigoted and Islamophobic rhetoric online targeting the city.
Yeah.
As a reason for this, saying increased security will be stationed at places of worship, major infrastructure points. The mayor's the city's first Muslim and Arab American mayor, so
we see what the Wall Street Journal op-ed writer has a problem with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also because that is the that city's in the district that Representative Omar represents.
That's Minnesota.
Oh, Minnesota. Sorry, I got it wrong. Shit.
There's a lot of similarities, but
it's on the other side of Lake Michigan, I think it is.
Yeah, but it's like, what? It's just like, what the hell, dude? Like, is this? Was this okay? So, let me see if I can look in the let me see if I can find the little article.
The New York Times had an article comparing Middle Eastern countries to animals compared to the U.S.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, you guys going all in on the racism.
Yeah.
Especially in the wake of the stuff going on in Israel and Palestine.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this one jackass had a chip on his shoulder, now a whole town is up in arms and had to get an increased police presence because now they fear for their safety.
Yeah.
Nice work.
Zines, but yeah, I gotta tell you,
yeah,
they're a problem. And by been that a problem we mean, since I was a kid.
Yeah, and by that we mean of the political variety, not some weird anti-Semitic bullshit.
No.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah. That's our first asshole of the week. Our second asshole of the week is the mother of the Oxford High School shooter, who was convicted of involuntary manslaughter this week. And you'll find out that, yeah, it fits. It 100% fits.
In case you're wondering, this is the shooting that happened in Michigan where the parents fled.
Mm-hmm.
Once they found out their son is the one that shot a bunch of people
mm-hmm.
at his high school. So this is the mother that you have a Michigan teenager who killed 4 fellow students, mm-hmm. wounded 7 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Has been convicted in connection with her son's crimes. The jury found her guilty of 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter.
Mm.
Believed to be the first time a parent has been tried for manslaughter in connection with the mass shooting conducted by their child.
Mm.
And yeah, this is, you know, these parents bought the kid a gun, all that kind of stuff, even though mentally the kid was not in great shape to, you know, be able to handle a weapon properly.
And that's not rhetorical, by the way. He was literally like, this guy had issues and they were recorded by experts.
This
kid is a danger to him. Yeah. This kid is a danger to himself and others.
Yeah.
Apparently he wanted to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. After he was seeing a demon that was throwing bowls across their house and wanted mental help.
Yeah.
But they turned that down.
Yeah. Because mental health care in this country is absolute shit. I mean, it is absolute shit.
Especially for males.
Yeah. But yeah, basically this mom very irresponsibly purchased him a firearm. For his, I think, was it like a birthday present or something? Might have been Christmas, yeah. And then he goes and shoots up a school. Nice work, Mom.
Yep.
God damn. I mean, there is stupid, and then there is stupid.
Well, and there's willfully negligent. And I absolutely would put her into that category.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she should have had DCFS on her ass, and so should the dad.
Mm-hmm.
But social services are not in a good place right now.
Yeah, no, they aren't. And then our last old asshole of the week is Tucker Carlson. He decided it would be a good idea. Well, he had been spotted since last week showing up in places all around Moscow and St. Petersburg. And there had been rumors going around that the reason he was there is because he was planning on doing an interview for Vladimir Putin for his little show he has on Twitter. And turns out, he did an interview with Vladimir Putin. And there are multiple times when you watch that and there's a look on Tucker's face where he sort of realizes, I have made probably the biggest mistake of my life, because he keeps throwing these like softballs at Vladimir. He keeps giving him all of these questions on a silver platter. And then Vladimir basically takes his hand and just smacks the silver platter away and goes off on these 15-minute tangents about how Ukraine isn't really a country, that it was originally part of Russia, but then Lenin made a mistake and gave them their independence and all this other shit. And it's like, there's multiple points where it's like he at one point says that Poland forced Hitler to invade them. Like, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of just let Putin dominate the talking.
Yeah.
As he went on and on about, you know, history and this kind of stuff with the Russian view of history.
Yeah.
In their Soviets, you know, neighborhood of countries and that kind of stuff. And, you know, him not being a Russian speaker, you know, decided not to get involved in any of it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of let him do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
So much to the point that Putin at a certain point made fun of him for not getting into the CIA.
Yep.
That kind of stuff. And
yeah,
it's just like, yeah, maybe this wasn't the greatest idea when you are repeatedly accused of, you know, pushing KGB narratives and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, there is no KGB. It's the, it's the GRU, but yeah, you get the point.
Yeah. So yeah, that's
really stupid. Thing. And now he's facing a bunch of economic sanctions from the EU. He, frankly, if there was any justice, he would be arrested once he steps foot on the on U.S. soil. But let's be honest, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, that was just a supremely stupid thing to do. And yeah, nice work, Tuck. Good luck ever getting another job in the United States again. But yeah, let's see. But it's not all terrible. We do have some heroes of the week to wash that awful taste out of our mouths. And the first one is that a federal appeals court has ruled that former President Donald Trump doesn't have broad immunity from prosecution with the federal case against him.
Yeah, it's a good thing here, especially because they're what I've seen from, you know, Supreme Court's legal people basically saying like they've got a pretty tight case here on this as far as his ability to appeal this to the Supreme Court. And there's likely no reason to, you know, outside of, you know, the Supreme Court just wanting to weigh in on this. So we probably won't see them rule on this. But yeah, the three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals, the D.C. Circuit ruled that Donald Trump doesn't enjoy broad immunity from federal prosecution, which is a big setback for his case in D.C. Yeah, it comes a month after lawyers for Trump made sweeping claims that he enjoyed immunity from federal prosecution, claims that lawyers for the special counsel said they would undermine, or claims that lawyers for the special counsel said would undermine democracy and give presidents license to commit crimes while in the White House, such as accepting bribes or directing government contracts or selling nuclear secrets to a foreign adversary.
Yeah.
It would be a striking paradox.
We had to worry about in the past, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The president who alone has the constitutional duty to ensure that laws be faithfully executed, or the sole officer capable of defying those laws with impunity. I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, they're should not be self-governed in that sense.
Yeah.
As, seriously. The whole federal government is designed to have checks and balances. And unlike what Trump wants, which is no consequences for any of his actions.
Yeah. So, yeah. And in less serious but still awesome news, at the Grammys, Luke Combs did a performance of his cover of Tracy Chapman's classic song Fast Car with Miss Tracy Chapman herself. And because of that, the original song, the original music video, and the album that it's on have all hit number one on iTunes.
Yeah, this is great to see.
Yeah.
Because that song is great. Her work is generally pretty great.
Yeah.
And yeah, as maybe somebody who has decided to just enjoy a private life since probably the early 2000s.
Yep.
And so she has not been like putting out a ton of music lately. So this was something that Luke Combs has kind of made a big song again as he's been performing it at his concerts and such.
Yeah.
But had the opportunity with the Grammys coming up to work with Tracy Chapman to perform the song together, and
did
a fantastic job enough to
get
people that probably hadn't heard it or, you know,
paid
much attention to it to really get into it. And yeah, that's great. She also, I think, won for the song was up for Song of the Year or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Cool. It goes to show that, you know, good songs never grow old. They're, you know, and weirdly enough, the really good songs never stop being relevant, because let's be honest, Fast Car is just as relevant now as it was back in 1989. yeah. Or 88 or whatever year that song came out. Yeah.
Yeah, it won Song of the Year at the 2023 CMA Awards.
Yep.
So, yeah, making her the first Black songwriter to win in that category.
Yep.
Also won Song for Single of the Year. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's yeah. Cool for her.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, refused to change the
lyrics at all. Yeah.
Yeah, to change, like, the gender of the words.
Yep.
To fit him, he's just like, no, this is a great song as is.
Yep.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a damn good song. So yeah. So with that, we move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And our first story tonight is that it was announced that King Charles, the sovereign monarch of the United Kingdom of Britain, Scotland, Wales, and a small, tiny part of Ireland, has cancer. And it gets doubly sad because you suddenly realize that King Charles is like a new age health nut, and he has a homeopath treating him.
Oh, no. I didn't hear that part.
Yep.
Oh.
So, who is it that's next in line to the throne?
The guy who's the
queen?
Is it Prince Harry or Prince William?
Yeah, it's the one who's
one of those two.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then after that, the eldest would it go down to the eldest kid? Would it go to the brother? I don't remember.
I have no freaking idea. The House of Windsor is the House of Windsor is like a combination. It's like a pine tree that's sticking out of like a single root. So I have no freaking idea.
Yeah, I think the inbreeding is the main reason for this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When your bloodline is built out of cousins, fucking cousins, and all that. So
well, that and also he's older than all holy hell. Like let's be like we forget the fact that you know his mother, you know. Queen Elizabeth reigned for 50 years, making her like the single longest reigning monarch in not just Great Britain. I'm pretty sure she's like one of the longest reigning monarchs in Europe's history. And because of that, King Charles had to basically wait to ascend the throne for almost all of his adult life. You know, so but then he finally gets it, and he's like, what, barely 2 years into his reign now? And this shit happens. So,
yeah. So who cares, really?
Yeah. Yeah, ultimately, I would be fine if they just abolished the monarchy in general. It soaks up too many resources to begin with.
Yeah.
That could definitely go to help the UK, especially right now. Have you seen the shit that they have to deal with there right now? Especially after Brexit.
They made a mess of things.
Oh. Yes, they did. It is not a good time to be living in the UK right now. Yeah. So King Charles has cancer. In other news, one of the things that the House Republicans tried to do this week is they tried to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Mayorkas. And they lost. It completely blew up in their faces by 2 votes.
They lost most heinously.
214 to 216.
Yes.
And like...
so much so that...
Well, you guys are going to talk about the badass thing about the guy coming in his wheelchair, right?
Yep, in his wheelchair, in a hospital gown with no shoes.
Yep.
Yeah. To make sure he voted.
And, yeah.
Yeah, people told... the speaker that like it's too close, you shouldn't be doing this, but he forged ahead anyway and got embarrassed.
Yep.
And so much so they're talking about, you know, if the funding for Israel and Ukraine happens and that goes poorly, then they may try to yank him out.
Yeah.
And try to somehow find another person to be the stooge.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, but yeah, that happened and it was a big embarrassment. And then it was compounded by the fact that, so the border bill that we've been getting, that was wrapped up with like giving funding to Israel and Ukraine and Taiwan, you know, it was pretty much them more or less giving into basically all of the GOP's demands that they were wanting to do. And I guess they called their bluff. And now the Senate GOP is actively blocking the bill that they actively helped construct. And they are, you know, they're going to have a hard time explaining it because they are very, I mean, there's been a couple of them very candid saying the reason we don't want to vote for them is because it'll make President Biden look good. That's a direct quote from Chuck Grassley.
Yeah, never mind that. It's the thing that they constantly complain about that needs to be solved, and somebody offers a solution and they're like, no, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want it for November.
Mm.
Not like they would do it anyway, even if they voted for it. But yeah, so Dems are probably going to move on from the border part of this and just move on to doing a funding bill for Israel and Ukraine support.
Yep.
Especially as the Ukraine stuff is kind of cutting it close.
Mm-hmm.
As they are, I think they just changed their chief of staff for the military over there.
Mm-hmm.
And very much are on their last legs with the U.S. funding stuff. So this is very much a thing that needs to get done pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, I forget who it was. I was basically saying like, or else we're going to have to start sending troops over there.
Yeah. Yeah, so fun times. So both of those stories happened this week, compounding error upon error and making them look incredibly ridiculous. So moving on from there, the primaries and caucuses for the GOP are still ongoing, even though we all know who's winning in the end. And in what can probably be one of the most insulting instances, over in the Nevada Republican primary, the choice of none of these candidates won the primary over Nikki Haley.
Yeah. So if you didn't know, the reason Trump wasn't on this is because his campaign forgot to get the paperwork in on time to get on the ballot.
Yep.
Literally, their whole thing is we want to get Trump back in office, and they're not like making sure they're getting their paperwork in on time in every state.
Yeah.
Which is like the classic case here, but
even
then, Nikki Haley lost to nobody.
Yep.
In this vote here. I don't know if they have the numbers for this, but yeah, she got less than the option for, we're good. If not just for Trump, but without his name on there, but yeah. But yeah, then they had the caucus and Trump won there, got the delegates. So
yeah.
Not like it mattered either way.
So, let's be honest. They're kind of only going through the motions at this point. But yeah. So that happened, and I would say that would have embarrassed Nikki Haley, but she's still deciding to campaign, and she's apparently planning on zeroing in on Trump's mental faculties. So she's trying to really get under his skin, I guess.
Playing the long game here.
Moving on from there.
Thinks that Trump's going to make it.
And yeah, pretty much. That's what I'm guessing anyway. Moving on from there, in science news, because of the increasingly extreme weather being caused by climate change, scientists are now considering the need for a quote Category 6 designation for hurricanes.
Yeah, because the current system has Category 5s are 157 miles per hour or higher.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be worried that we're in the era where things could go higher.
Mm-hmm.
And that new Category 6 should include any storm with wind speeds above 192 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an amazing force there to consider. So yeah, this is just one of those signs like, oh yeah, things aren't going to get better.
No.
With this stuff for a while.
No, they're only rather candidly going to get worse. Unless we start doing something about it. But yeah, so that's just a wonderful little thought to have in your head. But moving on from there, we're moving on now to the entertainment portion of the show. And the first entertainment story we have is Gina Carano is now suing Disney over her firing, and her lawsuit is being funded by Elon Musk.
Yeah, because there was a thing that Elon Musk said a while back that anybody being, let's see, is promised to pay for legal actions taken by people claiming discrimination from posts on Twitter/X.
Mm-hmm.
Though technically the post that she was being criticized for originated on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. She filed the suit in California federal court, alleging wrongful termination and discrimination, as well as demand that the court should force Lucasfilm to recast her and pay at least $75,000 in punitive damages. Which is like...
No.
Court can't force somebody to give you the job back.
No, they cannot.
Especially in an at-will state.
Yeah.
Where they can fire you for pretty much any reason as long as they claim it's not because of, you know,
mm-hmm.
Sexual discrimination or gender, you know.
Yeah.
Any of that stuff. But they can easily claim that she was creating a hostile work environment of sorts with her tweets and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is likely to not go anywhere. And certainly not a way for her to get back in Disney's good graces.
Yeah.
So have fun there wasting Elon Musk's money.
Yeah.
That's the only good thing here.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then we also found out that Hasbro is laying off 1,100 people.
Yeah, nearly 20% of their workforce
mm-hmm.
amid an ongoing slump in their toy sales. Cuts which come in addition to the roughly 800 jobs eliminated earlier this year, so they're at about 2,000 in 2024, it seems like. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the decision was made in light of market headwinds proving to be stronger and more persistent than planned. You know, definitely not because of Hasbro making poor decisions.
Mm.
But, yeah. Yeah, they make the Transformers toys, Play-Doh, Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons is them now.
Mm.
Yeah, they had 6,300 employees, so they've laid off almost a third of their workforce
mm-hmm.
in the last few months. So there you go. Great stuff mm-hmm. from them as more of these companies start cutting people.
Oh, Lord. Foolish people. And, then we get another bit of bullshittery. So remember a couple months back, we talked about, Warner Brothers was basically, just shelving and deleting a bunch of their finished films and use them as tax write-offs. And one of them was Coyote versus Acme, which was basically a comedy about where Wile E. Coyote finally gets fed up with the fact that all the Acme products he keeps buying, blow up in his face. So he decides to take them to court. It could have been something. And then the news went out that, apparently it got enough buzz that Warner Bros. Was like, yeah, you know what? We'll see us shop it around, see if we can get somebody to take it on. And they ended up doing the absolute just bare minimum to try and sell it and refused all offers that were given.
Yeah. Basically, from what I had read, they desired to get at least $75 to $80 million for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix, Amazon, Paramount made offers. Paramount even apparently wanted to give the movie a healthy theatrical run, but Warner Brothers Discovery rejected them because it came in below their desired price tag. But apparently they didn't tell anybody that that was the price they wanted. They didn't allow any of the studios to give a counteroffer once the initial offer was rejected. As the sources here, it was a take it or leave it situation, one that other studios didn't even know they were entering into. So, you know, very much doing the bare minimum to act like, oh, we tried, but none of these were satisfactory. And it's like, man, you're asking a lot of money for this. You're not telling these companies that that's what you're desiring, because they may just say like, okay, yeah, sure. We'll do that. But no. They just wanted to get this controversy behind them, want to close the books, and ultimately remove this movie from all sources. So
yeah. So this is the another issue with the fact that, you know, all of our stuff is now going to streaming and stuff. They can basically cost all this time and labor and then just completely shelve it. And, you know, make it into a tax write-off.
It's not a new thing. There have been stuff that's been made and finished and then just never released. In the past, usually, there have been stuff like licensed properties. They just made a thing and just never released it so they could keep the rights going to show like a supposed good faith attempt at making something. That kind of stuff. But yeah, this is just showing how rotten some of these services are when the companies running them don't even want to keep the properties they fully own on there because they can just sell it out to make even more money. And then some of this other stuff, they just want to get rid of it because that's going to make more money than what they'll get from subscriptions and views and that. That's the fun bit of hell we're in right now.
Yeah. But in a slightly more positive news, Disney Plus has gotten the film rights for Taylor Swift Eras Tour concert film. And they're, I guess they're getting ready to put it up on March 15th. So.
Yeah. That'll be fun to see. This is the movie that came in to theaters October 13th. Pulled in $261 million at the box office, making it the highest grossing concert film to date, and just kind of showing how big the Taylor Swift frenzy is right now with everything that's going on. But yeah, this the newly expanded version of this concert film is debuting March 15th on Disney Plus. It'll include, I think, 5 extra songs being performed, so that'll be even more stuff there people watch. Yeah, based on... Okay, never mind. Yeah, looks like it's going to be pretty fun to see.
Yep. So. In other good news, Percy Jackson and the Olympians was renewed for a second season at Disney+. So,
yeah. Cool to see this is doing well enough to get another season. After the original stuff Disney tried to make for this was not very good. Not what the fans wanted, so yeah. That's great news for fans of the original books.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, Rick Riordan is actually involved, and it doesn't suck.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's happening. We also got news that Warner Brothers Discovery, Fox, and Disney are partnering to launch a sports joint venture.
Yeah. Seems like a fairly decent idea, the one that probably would not have happened in the recent past here. Fox Corp, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Disney are looking to launch a new streaming joint venture that will make all of their sports programming available under a single broadband roof. We'll put content from ESPN, TNT, Fox Sports on a new standalone app, and in the process likely shake up the world of TV sports. As these are kind of the channels and such that, you know, would increase your cable bill a substantial amount more than your average channel that's on there. Your ESPNs and ABCs and Fox Sports and TNTs and all that stuff will cover a lot of the biggest leagues out there, at least here in the North America. So that'll be potentially a solid option, especially if you're subscribing to like a YouTube TV or whatever, just for the sports stuff.
Mm-hmm.
See, pricing will be announced at a later date. Companies will likely set a monthly subscription that is more than a consumer would pay for a standalone regional sports network, which costs $20 to $30 per month, and less than a larger digital programming package such as Hulu plus live TV or YouTube TV,
mm-hmm.
which costs around $75 to $80 a month from yep. what the sources are saying. So it seems like it could be an enticing offer.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to see how that goes when they announce it sometime later this year.
Mm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And now for the trailer stuff. We got an official trailer for Paramount Plus's Knuckles series.
Yeah, a weird thing that would have never expected to potentially be a quality thing, but from the trailer they showed, it looks pretty good. Basically, Knuckles is while hanging on Earth, is just kind of bored and kind of just wants to fight. So he kind of sets up a fight club ring in Sonic's house.
Yeah.
Tries to get the dog to fight the mailman. but instead kind of gets sent out to figure out what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the people making this seem to know the Knuckles fandom
mm-hmm.
as, Knuckles is wearing the hat from the original OVA,
mm-hmm.
The big like Australian cowboy hat thing he's memed with.
Yeah.
As well as they make good use of a song called Knuck If You Buck
mm-hmm.
In this. So they're fully in with the culture here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's looking pretty neat. This is set between Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 as far as the movies are concerned. So it'll start April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for A Quiet Place Day One.
Yeah, kind of telling the origin story of the Quiet Place universe.
Yep.
Where the aliens sort of appear on Earth and start just killing people en masse that are making noise, which, as with all the chaos that's going on, makes, you know, huge swaths of people easy targets for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks like that could be pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that'll be out June 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
And that is it for tonight, folks. I do believe we've got ourselves a show. Yeah, we do. We got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And with that, we are going to go ahead and wind it down for the night. Thank you, Chris and Teresa, for joining me. And I would like to remind our listeners, if you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to spread us to your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your people at work, your mortal enemies, and everywhere in between, because they may hate you, but they may love us. So we're going to go ahead and shut it down for the night. We're still going to have a Day Zero update tomorrow, hopefully, if the Super Bowl doesn't get in the way. So expect to hear that. And, with that, I'm just going to go back to, playing some more Persona 3, because, damn, I'm kind of loving this game. And, if you liked Hazmat Hotel a bunch, watch Hell of a Boss. It's on YouTube. It's awesome. And we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for the night. Good night, everybody.